We have no clock in here, but it's close. The roll call, we have everyone here, I believe. We have both youth and governance. We have the full committee. Move on to approval of the minutes of the previous meeting. It's been moved to approve by Gabe Noodle. Do we have a second?
Second.
Seconded by Mike Skalinski. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Youth and governance?
Aye.
Chairman, committee members, supervisors, youth and government comments. There's going to be, naturally a whole lot coming before us as far as the budget. Want to keep sight on, some of the big and small things that we've got. One of the big things is naturally the golf course. We've also got many things going on with the parks. Want to keep open minds and communication with the staff as far as questions on those things. I spent some time, I always do, I read my paper at the Katy Park in the morning. So naturally spent some time there. I walk my dog there probably 3-4 days a week. I was amazed at the amount of people, once the weather has cooled off here, that were out utilizing those trails. Saturday, in fact, I always break the rules. I have a leash, but I let the dog go if I see no one within a half a mile of me. And you couldn't do that Saturday. There were so many people out there. Saturday, then, I also was at the Fox River Park, and the amount of people on our disc golf course was amazing. There was no tournament that I knew of, but just people everywhere. Yesterday I was back out at Fox River. It was the same thing. There was a group of people at an old car rally. They must have rented one of the structures there in parking lot one, and it was just full. I didn't go over to Silver Lake, but I mean I was in those two. And when you see the use, when the weather gets good like this, and people can actually get out and about, it's amazing. I know we asked Ray at our last meeting to look at some of the things on the Katy Park that we can do. Now he's had a lot of things coming up to this meeting to work on, and so we're not prepared with those answers as far as some of the water things we talked about. We wanted to look at canoes and kayaks, and the dive platform was a big thing. So we probably won't get into any of that tonight, but at our next meeting, hopefully we'll have a little bit more information. The only thing that I know of coming up, and John's going to get into it, I'm sure, like a KD, and if you've never done it last year, we did too. I think it's October 13th. It's the Stars in the Park thing, and if you get a chance, it's really cool to go out there. It's the Lake County College that comes out with their big scopes. Really, it's a neat thing to do. I think that's all I have. Any other committee members?
Yeah,
I'm just ready to dance.
I'd like to thank Jonathan for helping open up the bicycle trail for the people that are handicapped. Handicapped vehicles on the bicycle trails. Permits and allowing some of the people to use motorized vehicles. Thank you.
Supervisor Noble.
I happened to run into somebody in Waterford that's on the town, I think she's a village clerk or something like that. And anytime that you would be interested in finding out how they started out from just an idea to developing into a hot air balloon event, annual event, and how they got local charities to get involved, and so that they could man what needed to be manned and so on, and make a money profit, a profit for nonprofit organizations that are willing to come to one of our meetings or talk to you or do anything you want to get us going in that direction.
And I've got a little information I was going to share with the committee, too.
Any other supervisors or youth and governance, any comments? If not, we're going to move on to citizens' comments. Any citizens that wish to address the committee would have 5 minutes on any agenda that you'd like to put forward to us, or it could be 6 minutes. It's we're not stuck on that. So citizens' comments. Anyone who wishes to speak? Yes, ma'am. And the only thing we ask you to do is give your name and address.
My name is Tammy Conforti. My address is 8547 33rd Avenue. I'd like to thank you for having me here tonight. I know this is going to be a lot of information. 5 minutes is not really conducive to as much as I'm going to throw at you. So I would be willing to come back and do a more formal presentation on the agenda at a later time, because this might invoke some questions that may not be able to be addressed. Okay. I was born and raised in Kenosha, and I'm an educational support professional, and I've worked in special ed. I came here to share my vision of creating inclusive, accessible playgrounds for children of all abilities. Unfortunately, the vast majority of playground equipment currently available denies children with disabilities the opportunity for exercise, entertainment, and social interactions. The American Disability Act defines disability as a physical or mental impairment that substantially limits one or more major life activities. Most people sadly think disabilities, you can see them, and there's a lot of unseen disability out there. Just because they don't look disabled doesn't mean a person isn't, so that's something I'd like you to keep in mind. I'm going to explain this a little bit, what inclusive and accessible means, so you can get a better understanding of the vision. Inclusive playgrounds are specially designed so that children with disabilities can have equal opportunities to access the individual pieces of equipment, the same as their non-disabled friends and siblings. The equipment is strategically placed so that will allow children to play side by side. An example of this would be that a variety of different types of swings are intermingled and placed in the same row. Sometimes you'll see an accessible playground and it'll have a ramp. A ramp does not mean it's accessible. Accessible to the equipment, but when you get there, you go up the ramp, down the ramp, up the ramp. That's not really playing with their friends. So that's what I mean by that. There are some special swings out there, and I gave you some resources on the back of the paper. These swings are high-backed, and they provide more body support and trunk support for children that need it. Parents and caregivers are able to supervise their children more effectively because they're playing with their brothers and sisters. Currently, if someone has a disabled child, they're over somewhere else where the disability equipment is, and then their typical children are someplace else, and it's really hard as a parent to split yourself like that. So I'm going to mention a little bit about the different types of equipment that's available. There's an overhead rings and monkey bars, and they can be of various heights. You can have one up higher for children with no disability, and you can have one side by side for children in wheelchairs. It's as simple as that. It's not really that hard to rearrange park equipment. Teeter-totters and merry-go-rounds are specially designed to accommodate all children. Double slides are a good idea, and they're great if they're of various heights and length, and that they go all the way to the ground, not a drop-off. If you have leg braces and you can't stop yourself, we need to be lower to the ground. High slides are kind of dangerous with the drop-off if you have a disability. These are really great options for facilitating parallel play. Slides should face north and east to avoid direct sunlight. Non-plastic slides should be considered because they do not produce static electricity, which can cause damage to children wearing cochlear implants. They can get a shock from going down those slides, and it can actually do damage to their implant. So that's something to think about when you're buying slides and installing them. Inclusive playgrounds should really have a separate play area, developmentally appropriate for children under three. Sand and water play areas are great for children as they provide that sensory play experience. Rocking equipment that moves in multiple directions and has backrests, footrests, handrests, and supportive seats are also important. There are so many companies out there now that are carrying ADA accessible playground equipment. They have consultants. If you were to look on a website and you saw something you were considering purchasing and you email them, they will send you stuff. They will send you books. They'll call you. So if you have a lot of questions about playground equipment, if you're going to be purchasing it. Accessible is a little trickier to define. Access to the playground means that there are concrete pathways that lead to the playground structure. Access to the equipment pieces refers to the surface that is under and surrounding this equipment. For a playground to be fully accessible for all children, parents, and grandparents with disabilities, it must be flat, smooth, and shock absorbing. Grass, sand, rocks, and wood chips are not options. Accessible play structures should have wide double ramps with rails. They should be flush, have transition points, and turnarounds. Transfer platforms are included as they are used by children to transfer in and out of the wheelchair from different equipment. Crawling equipment, such as tunnels, should be lowered to the ground to allow easy access. Jumping equipment should be varied and provide challenges, and there should be a variety of access routes to go on and off the equipment. This helps challenge all children to learn a different set of physical skills and problem-solving skills. The facilities surrounding the playground needs to be inclusive and accessible. Fencing should be considered as it helps to provide safe boundaries and protection. Trees or other shade elements also help as shade for some children who have trouble regulating their body temperatures. Benches should be securely mounted and strategically positioned, allowing optimal opportunities for adult supervision. The benches should be open on both sides to allow people to transfer in and out of their wheelchairs or to park their wheelchairs next to the benches. Restrooms should be located within a reasonable walking or wheelchair distance. Stalls, sinks, toilets, grab bars, change tables, and drinking fountains must meet current ADA regulations. Restroom doors should be regulation width and open electronically. This is a big one. In parks, you go to a park and you go try to go to a bathroom, and we've experienced this with a little friend of mine in a wheelchair. There's grass leading to the bathroom, so already she can't propel herself forward. She's not strong enough. So she can't get to the bathroom because there's not a path for her. When she does get to the bathroom with assistance, more or less, there's a door there, which she cannot open because she's sitting in a wheelchair. It doesn't have a hip pad to open it electronically. So you've already, she's incurred two barriers just to use the facilities. Now the facilities might be ADA accessible, but you got two barriers before you even get there. So that's something to think about. Picnic tables should have extended tops on the end, on both sides, and they can accommodate a wheelchair to slide out under. I mean, if you're having a picnic table, what's the difference of having a couple more feet, ordering a little specially designed one so wheelchairs can go on it? It's not a big deal. The height of the picnic tables must allow for knee and toe clearance. Sometimes these knee picnic tables, you try to get under there with a wheelchair and there's a barrier under there and it pushes you away from the table. So that's tricky too. Parking lots must be free of any natural or man-made barriers. They must be conducive to safely entering or leaving the park on foot or in a wheelchair. Keep in mind that some vehicles are equipped with electronic lifts. Concrete paths must be flush and connected to all park areas, including the playground, pavilions, picnic tables, areas, restrooms, and parking lot. Inclusive, accessible playgrounds are unique and specially designed so that they can be used by children of all abilities. These playgrounds can help to generate revenue as they are heavily used because of all the amenities they offer to families. Families travel to these destination playgrounds and they spend their money in the surrounding areas. They can also rent the pavilions for special occasions. I hope by sharing this information with you today, I have increased your awareness of this issue. As your budget allows, please consider purchasing inclusive, accessible pieces of playground equipment in the future. It may be possible to apply for local, state, and federal grants that promote the well-being of all children. As your equipment gets old or gets damaged, replace it with new, accessible options. To aid you with this, I have included a list of playground manufacturers that you may find helpful when making purchases in the future. Let's work together and create playgrounds that include all children.
Thank you very much.
I'm going to pass this around real quick. These playgrounds are for everybody, and this grandma here is disabled, and she's 86 years old, and she's able to navigate this playground. This is a pretty important piece I wanted to share with you because the surface is conducive. There was also a Vietnam vet, and he had lost his leg, and he was also able to navigate the surface because, and he could play with his grandchildren, which was really important. And he said there's so many parks he can't go to because he can't navigate. So I just, you guys can take a look at this and kind of pass it around, I guess.
Do you have another copy of your address that you just made?
Yes, please.
Yes, if you could give a copy to Mr. Rudy in the green shirt. He's our director of parks, and Mr. Robert. Mr. Rudy works with many grants and has done a wonderful job and very aggressive as far as what we're doing with our playgrounds and things. So
there are grants that have traditionally given to these, so you don't have to have this big awareness piece. They've already done it, so they would know what you're talking about. And there's some of these sites, and there's pages and pages and pages of grants that have given to accessible playgrounds. There's so many states that have these now. Chicago's got a couple, Texas has got them, Florida's got them. There's a really nice one in Port Washington, which we visited yesterday. We have a Facebook site. It's called the Kenosha Dream Playground Project. You can access that, and you can get a lot of information through that. So,
well, we really want to thank you and commend you for your involvement in this, and thank you for coming to speak to us. But as I said, Mr. Rudy and this committee and this administration for Kenosha County is very aggressive with this type of thing. So we will, whether you want to come and speak with us again or make a formal, some type of, whether it be, it wouldn't have to be that formal, but you just come and speak under citizens' comments at the county board, as you did tonight.
I have pictures. I also have a DVD, awareness DVD that I've created. We also recently became a nonprofit organization, and we're seeking opportunities to spread awareness.
And I think most people are aware of you already, because I certainly was, reading just the Kenosha News. So I think you've begun something here. Possibly the next step, and we could talk after this meeting or, at another date, but doing something before the county board.
That'd be great.
Yeah. I wouldn't recommend it in the next couple months because of this budget stuff.
That's fine.
But when everybody's real relaxed.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. Thank you. Thank you very much.
You're
any other people wish to speak on our citizens' comments? Yes, sir.
Larry Fitzgerald, 162-23-93rd Street. Been there 36 years in that area, right west of MB&C there. And some of you people don't know much about it, but over these many years, Gary and I in the highway department bunted heads many, many, many times. And Gary, are you listening to me here? I'm going to say something to you right now that's going to be shocking to you. Thank you. Thank you very, very much for all the work that's being done down there at MB&C. Because one of the things also a lot of you are not aware of, Hawkins, the big Hawkins farm down here, of the high percentage of acres, he rents the land right west of me. And all the flooding that comes out of the off those fields and everything, it's right north of the park, south of IVC there. And last fall, he put in, at his expense, he rents the land now, some great big 10 to 12 inch pipe buried them at the west end of the field into the, up towards the woods, and then right between me and there, another one that went way back and it branched off, and that was a lot of money he stuck in there. At his own expense, only with the agreement of the person he rented the land for, he could have it for, rent it for him for 5 years. So he's spending a lot of work there. Now all the work and everything that's being done on MB is just unbelievable. The guys are working from 6:30 in the morning to 7 at night on the gas lines. The gas lines are in. They're still finishing up the fiber optic cable, the Highline wires, and those guys are coming all the way from La Crosse on that contract to put it in. But the little bit of a problem I'm asking Gary and the Highway Department to do now is right at my west edge of my property, there's a little bitty culvert to take that water to the north side of the road on Highway C. So that's a Coke bottle effect, Venturi effect, also with a Highline post right there in that ditch. So I'm asking them to greatly consider right west of that ditch, past where the little bitty culvert is now, to put in two 36-inch culverts to disperse that, some of that water to the north side of Highway C and past me, because my culvert should take it now with 36 of it and go across the north side. And I've given them pictures years back of showing that whole highway underwater many, many, many times over the years. So that's one great thing. If they're considering that, Gary, are you going to be doing that or not? I mean,
yeah, it's already in the plan.
Okay. Do you think it'll be done this year yet, or?
It's going to depend on the timing of the seeding and mulching, because we have to make sure that wherever we run that water to will be stable in the spring, and we're not sure if we'll get proper growth on those ditches. But if it's not done this fall, it will definitely be done in the spring. It has to be done. It's part of the drainage plan.
And please try and do it at least a year before you put the blacktop in, because they always put the black, just a week or two before you put blacktop in these roads, they put the culverts. And you've got to soak it down and pound it, tamp it, and every darn thing else, and let it set a year, because it's like on Highway D, where they put new culverts, there's going to be a recess in there. It makes a lot of noise. One other thing I've been doing, too, is when I left Sunday morning, I've been doing it every day, just about the barriers of the road closed signs. And the one east of MB, I pulled that one thing out back where it was. People just, by their own power, just push them back. And then the one right by my road, they were so angered right at the edge of my driveway. And especially Sunday morning at 7, I pulled that thing back to where it was supposed to be. Somebody tore it way back. And then on Highway D and C, guy actually took that sign barrier down and just threw it down. So I'm asking, is there any way we can put a heavier sandbags or something to hold those things in a place for these people, or is this something we just have to live with?
Probably going to have to live with it, although I'll make sure that the sheriff knows, and he can. They're very good at patrolling those areas. Yeah. I'll make sure he knows.
One thing I will say, too, many times I call to help the deputies at certain times of the day. Boy, the traffic through there was unbelievable. And two Thursdays ago, there were three deputies out there for 2.5 hours giving tickets out left and right. And a ticket there is $174. So I guess that. But I have to say, those highway workers, the contractors, are putting an extremely hard work in there. For 12 hours a day, those guys are working there. So they really are earning their money, what's being spent on that intersection. Again, Gary, thank you very much for working on that intersection and all the people that have been working on it. Greatly appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Fitzgerald. Any other citizens wish to speak under citizens' comments? If not, citizens' comments would be closed. We'll move on to facilities, old business, update on the 60th Street tower replacement.
Yeah, I'm going to handle that one. It's moving forward at, I'm using the word measured pace. It's moving, but it's not moving as fast as I'd like. There's three parallel paths, and I think I used that description at last month's meeting, but basically we're working with the City Council and the Airport Commission to jump through the necessary hoops to change the zoning ordinances with the city. That's all on track. Every committee meeting and commission meeting I've been to, everything's been passed unanimously. So the next step is the plan commission takes up our request for a conditional use permit October 2nd, which will kind of be the last stage in the city council process. The ordinances that we requested or needed to be changed in order to accommodate the heights that we're talking about, those go to city council, I believe, next week. And the airport commission I've met with them last week, and I have to meet with them like one more time after the FAA finishes doing their analysis of it. The FAA hasn't completed their stuff. I don't think there's anything negative going on. They're just not moving as fast as they indicated they would. They said it was going to be about a 45-day review process. We're already into 70-plus days. But we are working to get it through the FAA. There hasn't been anything that they've indicated to us is going to be a problem. Basically, those things are on track, and we actually issued the RFP for the tower itself on Friday. So we've got that launched. We're going to have a walk-through teleconference next Monday, because most of these tower manufacturers, there's one or two in the state, but the bulk of them are spread out all over the United States. So we expect people from across the nation to really bid on this thing. That's why we did a teleconference. That'll be next Monday. So we're planning on, by the end of September to about October 2nd, hopefully having the three parallel paths converge so that we can actually make a decision. Hopefully the bids will be in by that time. The bids close, I think it's September 28th, if I remember right. And we're hoping to have all the information together, all the hoops jumped through with the city, and the FAA approval in hand, so that we can actually make a decision, select a contractor, and get foundations in the ground. Target date is November 15th. So if we can get the foundations in, even if the towers take a bit longer to manufacture and get to site, it's only about a three to four day construction process of actually getting the tower up. The key is being able to get those footings in the foundations in the ground. So I'm not going to say it's for sure going to happen, but I think at this point we're still, I'm kind of cautiously optimistic that we're going to be able to get it if we can get some cooperation. So that's where that is at right now.
All right, then we'll move on to the park and ride structure. Everyone that's been here for a while, and now the new committee members, is aware that we've been talking about this for months, and actually for a couple of years, 3 years. And we're now down to the point where, by the state bid structure, we are able to finish this. The problem that we ran into was it's a small project. What's left, actually, sounds like a lot of money, but it's a small project. And the bid packet for these contractors was 200-some pages.
288 pages.
That they had to come up with, so we had one bid. Ray will go from there, but we, on that smaller project, what happens is the state makes it so difficult for this poor bidder that the cost was, what, $57,000
above what we estimated.
Right.
Yep.
So yep. I guess I said it all. Maybe
that's pretty much it. It took us about 3 years to get everything organized and specced out and put together the way it has to be to meet the state guidelines for this thing. And it's only, it was estimated to be about $160,000 worth of work to complete it. And we had four contractors show up for the walkthrough. It was a mandatory walkthrough. And one of those folks put in a bid, a local company, Pieper Electric. And that was it. That was the only bid that we got. The bid came in, as Dennis indicated, $57,000 over what we estimated. It's still, the good news is it still was within the realm of what the state had left in the original project budget to fund it. The funding split on this project is roughly 90-10. 90% by the feds administered by the state, 10% by us local match. And the original project, Jim, I think was about 4.2, or Vicky or Gary, you guys know. You
were talking about it before. You
came. It was like 4.2 million for the original project. So our total investment, local investment, would be $420,000 then, based on that general split of 90-10. Because of the way the bids came in, the bottom line, as you saw the resolution in the packet, we need our additional commitment is going to be $23,000 and change, I think is what it amounts to. So what we had, although the state had adequate funds left in the entire project budget, what the county had set aside as a match for that was not quite adequate. So that's what the resolution, the intent is to get that additional, it nets out to $20,000 additional county match needed to finish the project based on the bid of $208,000. I had to put together a narrative to the state that I haven't gotten final approval on it yet, but whenever there's less than three bids, and if the project comes in over, I think it's 10% over what was estimated, you have to do an explanation of why that was. Well, we had advertised, usually we only advertise in two newspapers, the Daily Reporter and the Labor paper. We had advertised in three, we actually included the Kenosha News, so there were three publications that we put it in. And on our website, we had it listed there, and we sent it out to 360 contractors that are on, kind of in the county's portfolio of contractors. Now, not all those contractors necessarily be eligible, but all the electrical guys would have been, all of the light construction guys would have been there. So of the 360 that it was sent to, there had to be at least a third of them that would have been eligible to bid. And in talking with the state, we just said, you know, it was a 288-page document for $160,000 of work. A lot of small guys are going to look at it and say, not worth me getting involved. And that, unfortunately, is what resulted, our theory is what resulted in the higher price. So that's what I put together as a narrative explanation to the state. It's part of a whole package that we should get a final approval on hopefully next week. And then this is kind of our piece, is asking for the $20,000 to be. We've got some other facilities projects that we had funds left over in because they came in under budget. So we're looking to take those funds, put them into this so we can finish this project and just tie up the loose ends and be done with it.
So what we would need tonight would be a motion to move these funds that are available into this project. Any other questions from anyone?
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, sir.
Do you have any projection, Ray, on how long, we finally get this thing up and operational, it would be to pick up what the projected revenue might be? I know it's an estimate, I'm not trying to.
We actually did, Jim started to, we ciphered out some projections for next year's budget. I don't remember what they are off the top of my head.
Between 40 and 45,000 is what it is, a year.
A year.
That's next year's budget.
Yeah.
It's a tad on the conservative side because we're not really sure. Depends on how many people we steal from the lot that's two blocks away.
Okay. And the funds we're talking about is just moving from others already completed this year that were coming out. Okay.
Correct.
Yeah, there's no additional borrowing needed.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions, comments?
Do you think it would be fruitless to bid it again?
I do, because that was the conversation I had with the lady from the state. I put that right in my narrative. I said that I really don't think there would be any point in rebidding this because we'd be under the same kind of guidelines. We'd send it out to the same 360 contractors, advertising the same publications. And it's kind of the old definition of insanity if we do the same thing and expect different results. I just don't think we would. I just don't think we would get different results because we had that conversation.
If it was part of the original $4.2 million project, it's right. Different. But if guys see something here for $156,000, they'd run from that. Nobody wants to get involved with the stringent guidelines that you have with it, with that.
You brought up the fact that kind of laid out a narrative to the state and the individual because it just seems ludicrous. And maybe it's a tier, a stair step, this much for this dollar level, or is it the same, let's say, 288 pages, regardless of the dollar value?
And Gary may have some insight because it's a CMAQ grant, a congestion mitigation
guys,
quality
more about
grant. And I know you've done those for the bike trail. It's amazing because I know that there's been sign issues and how very detailed stuff that normally you would not take into consideration because it's not that critical to the process or anything. And it's just part. And if you don't follow the rules, you don't do the requirements. One of the things that comes to mind is there's this DBE requirement. You have to have a 4%. You have to do like a really above and beyond effort to get 4% of minority or disadvantaged businesses to be a part of this. And then because there was only one contractor, it had to go down like two levels of subcontracting. And I think they finally have met the requirement. And those were things, it took about 3 weeks for them just to get that all pulled together and to package so that we can get this approved by the state. So I think the short answer to your question is my understanding is no, it isn't a tiered. If it's under this amount, you only have to follow this set of guidelines. It's kind of one size fits all. And Gary, you can tell me if I'm wrong on that, but that's my impression based on this experience.
No, that's pretty accurate. Part of the problem is this is all processed through Federal Highways, and Federal Highways is very good at doing projects that have to do with highways and bridges and roads. They don't have a lot of experience in parking structures. It's kind of an odd project for them. So they've kind of taken these boilerplate documents that they use for highways and they're adapting them to parking structure. And there's really a lot of stuff in there that probably isn't even applicable to a parking structure project. But they're afraid to take it out because they might be taking something out that is going, it would be against some federal policy, you know. So it, as unbelievable as that sounds, that's really what happened in a case like this.
You know, if you're talking highways and bridges, you're talking millions, hundreds of millions of dollars in projects, and there you need it. $57,000. So we'd be pushing rope. And the reason I'm asking is there anything we can do to help you guys out to maybe use our local representatives to start pushing it back to the state? So listen, what's going on here? But it sounds to me is exactly right. You know, we get so many regulations, whether it's state or federal level, nobody even knows where they all are because they just keep piling on top of each other. And you're right, so one time you take it out. But for 50, 280, I'm surprised you got any bids. I don't think if I owned a business, I'd bid on it for $57,000. So, okay. I just wanted to know if there was anything maybe we could do or if there was any kind of a responsiveness from the state that, boy, we need to simplify this a little bit because this wasted a lot of your time and even the contractors just walking away. So you can't be competitive on it.
The other problem, too, is with the bonding. The bonding requirements are so high for these type of projects that, you know, a smaller company can't afford to pay for the bonds that are required for, you know, performance bonds and that type of thing. It's expensive, and a small company can't afford to do that. So that's part of the, you know, the problem with accepting the use of federal funds is that that's the end result.
So that's kind of, in a nutshell, is if you want to use these funds, you got to kind of take the good with the bad. Okay. Thank you for clarifying.
I think if anyone wants to, it's very good to talk to your local and your state senators, congressmen, everybody. But on this project, I think all I want tonight is a motion to approve this $23,868,000.
So moved.
Second.
Who would second to approve the additional net cost of the county? $23,868. Anything on the question? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Youth and governance?
Aye.
So we're moving on. Thank you. New business facilities. Energy efficiency lighting project.
You know what, Ron? Ron's got a little handout for a project that we just started.
And lights, and so we needed to change out our existing T12 lights. Focus on Energy had a really good rebate program taking place right now, and it was necessary to get this completed by the 1st of October. And this is kind of like a synopsis of what we're doing. The labor to install all of the fixtures, the ballast and bulbs, came in at $63,000. Cost for the bulbs were $17,000. Ballast another $35,000, making the project $116,000. We're getting a $31,000 rebate from Focus on Energy, and our payback is going to be about 3.6 years.
And the only thing that I caution is that there's a couple things. One, at the top, it's really this building. All these lights in here are going to be replaced. We started last Tuesday, I think, was when it, after Labor Day, they started in this building. All these are going to be replaced with T8s, more efficient. They're not the state-of-the-art, you know, LED-type bulbs, but to be, based on what we know at this point, interior LED lights, the payback, that would blow up to about probably four or five times what that is there. It's just not there yet. It will be in a few years. This gets to what Ron indicated already, that the T12s are being phased out of production. You have to replace them. These at least buy us probably about, between the ballast and the bulbs, ballast more so, probably buy us 5 to 10 years before we would want to do something major again. And in that 5 to 10 years, the LED costs are going to come down dramatically from where they're at. So when we go to do this building going forward, we'll be able to replace them with probably what then isn't state-of-the-art, but still much more efficient than even the ones we're putting in now. But the ones we're putting in now are going to be a heck of a lot more efficient than ones that are up here currently. And it's this building, the job center, and the public safety building. Those are the three buildings that we picked out because we figured we'd be able to do them budget-wise. This comes out of the, if you remember, the line item in the budget last year. It's called energy technology reduction. Basically, what we're doing, what projects we're doing out of that are lighting projects and HVAC control projects. Anything that improves building energy consumption, reduces it. This is one of those projects. The 3.6 years, I question that figure because based on earlier calculations we did, I think that this is really, really conservative by the focus on energy folks. I think that they may have erred in the number of hours that they put in their formula to light. They didn't take into account that the public safety building is a 24/7 building. That's what I think, because Ron just gave me this afternoon, and I think that actually is probably closer just to snit over 2 years based on the original projections that we did.
Correct.
In any event, it's a good project. It's a pretty good-sized project. There's over 7,500 bulbs and over 4,000 ballasts that are going to be replaced. They started on it. Grunau was a successful bidder for the labor. We direct purchased all of the light bulbs so we could ensure sales tax savings, and we're going to have it done by October 1st, come hell or high water, basically.
And Grunau's a local company.
They are actually out of Milwaukee. There were 6 guys that bid on it, if I remember right. A local company, Southwest.
Great Lakes.
Was it Great Lakes? Was the local company? Than some of the high ones.
Triple E out of Burlington.
Oh yeah, there's a Burlington.
I'm not familiar with them, but they were there. Pieper and Roman.
That's right. See, I consider Bruno a local company.
Yeah, their trucks are all
everywhere. People don't.
Yeah.
I think that's a problem with a lot of people in the way they look at a community. And Milwaukee's part of our community. Yeah. So is Gurnee.
Right. Yeah. Right.
So
it is local.
Yeah, a local company.
So right to that.
Yeah, maybe you said this and I didn't hear it, but on the part where it says the public safety building, are we splitting that cost with the city, or how is that being worked out?
Those things will be charged to this to the energy reduction, but the mechanism that's in place for the IGA allows us to recapture those costs. Anything that goes into the public safety building from a maintenance standpoint or a capital standpoint all gets captured as part of the IGA, the new IGA.
IGA.
Intergovernmental agreement with the city. I'm sorry.
We're starting litigation with them right now to cover this.
Yeah, you're a real fan of the city, I remember that.
Yeah. Well, we know what they're going to do. They're just not going to pay their bill. So. Any other questions on these light bulbs? We'll move on. Detention center.
Frank's going to do this one. This is another project that's funded out of that energy technology reduction.
The detention center is a very large facility with many, many HVAC units. The control system that's in there now is at the end of its life expectancy and starting to have some problems, so it was an excellent candidate being for updating to digital controls, which we've been slowly doing is coming up on systems that are aging. So we're gonna actually convert everything over from the old system, analog system, to digital control system. The wisdom is it probably saves about 10% per year on electrical costs, being more efficient. So we've applied for rebates and focus on energy. We're still waiting to hear back from them on that, but we're doing the engineering now. We expect to start installation mid-October and be done by the end of the year.
Any questions? We'll move on to golf, highway and parks. New business golf, director's report. Dan is not with us this evening. He's at another meeting.
Merchandising seminar, yeah.
Ray's going to handle this.
Do something fairly brief, and Jim is going to follow up on this. Will hopefully kind of segue into the business, the golf business report.
How do you want, Ray?
So, August was a terrific month. It generated more revenue than the past three Augusts. And last year was kind of was the leader until this year. Given a combination of excellent weather, great course conditions, and enhanced promotional activities year-to-date, revenues and rounds are up. We're also continuing to work diligently to keep the costs down. So we're in pretty good shape in that regard. But like I say, I'm not going to steal any of Jim's thunder because he put together kind of a business report that will go into a lot more detail in that regard. Food and beverage sales continue to trend positive. Today we served over 2,000 fish fries, an increase of 58% over last year. 2012 food and beverage and merchandise has grossed just over $500,000, up 93,000, 22% relative to 2011. Continue to receive outstanding reviews of the course conditions. Finished grading and seating next to the cart paths has started at Brightondale and will be completed. It's pretty much all work crew that's being used to do that work. Junior program finished strong, had over 105 kids from 8 to 16 in age participate in both courses. Program emphasized basic golf swings, rules, etiquette, introduction to playing on the courses, and was capped with a parent-child outing and banquet that was pretty well attended. So that was pretty much what Dan had put together for highlights from August. And we can segue right into the next thing if the chairman would like to.
You should have all received, I think there's five pages here. I'm going to briefly go through them one by one. And I know there were some questions asked by several of the supervisors last month, and I want to make sure we address them all. And this is probably one of the more detailed golf numbers reports that has been done. It doesn't mean that this information hasn't always been there. It's always been there. The accounting has improved some because we have now available to us this active golf system, which was purchased in 2010, was the first year they used it. So the finance people have gotten better information the last 3 years than they had going back and before that, because basically it was, I don't want to call it a shoebox, but it was a shoebox. So, I mean, it was all based on if you took the cash in, this is how it was done. But the number of rounds might have, may or may not have been right. But since 2010, 2011, 2012, this information is pretty accurate. First page, it's called Golf Statistics, August year to date. This is the same information that we issued last month. It was through July. This month is through August. It gives you an idea of how much we're up in revenues compared to 2010 and 2011. 2012 is $2.3 million. Last year we were at $2 million. The year before that, a little over $2 million. Expenses are lower than 2010 and a little bit higher than last year, but the good news is that the profit this year is up $260,000 compared to last year and $350,000 compared to the year before. And we'll look at profitability by month on a couple of slides coming up. There's also some statistics there that shows the concession revenue per round is up, the golf revenue per round is up, and the expenses per round are down. So this year, everything in the golf operation, financial-wise, at this high summary level is good news.
Jim, I have a question for you. That's a little bit of a comment too. Why something is done. When you get into your rounds played, you use an actual amount, 75,000, 65 in 2011, 72,000 2010. Increase and decrease is an actual amount. Concession revenue per round, $5.47. Golf operation revenue per round, $25. Expenses per round, $27. To someone looking at this, and I understand what you have here, but when you do, and I know it's an accounting thing, when you do the top columns that you have here, you have them in dollars, just like you do down below. And if some bird off the street looked at this, they'd think golf operations were $1,925 for 2012. So could we have this in actual dollars?
Oh, I got it.
I just rounded off the thousands of dollars.
No, that's $1,925,000.
Yeah. Okay. Again, accountant. So I'm in the middle, so I can see. What he's asking, Jim, is because it doesn't have the three zeros, it looks like 414 because down below we've got other stuff that's actual dollars. And even though in accounting methodology, you know, they lop the zeros off.
I can.
You're
do
asking
that.
To put the
I know what you're asking for. The title on top, and from the way the accounting brains work, those zeros means everything's in thousands of dollars.
Yeah, but that's
414.
That's not how mine works.
I'll change it.
And
no problem.
And down below, it's in actual dollars.
Correct.
So if we're looking at one document, I want them all the same.
No problem.
Okay. Cool. Thank you.
Okay. Second page is just a recap of rounds. Somebody wanted to question their. What was the number of rounds per month by course? It's on there. I just highlighted in the middle there, bolded that one row, because that's August year to date. If you go below the line in 2010 and 2011, you'll see the additional rounds where we filled up, and there's nothing, obviously, in 2012 for September, October, and November yet. Page 3.
Any questions on page 2?
Oh, should we ask this week alone?
Yep.
Yeah, sure.
Let's do it now.
Okay. Can I go back to the other page?
Sure.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
The one that Ray just gave us, he shows it there. Overall, 2012 food beverage merchandises worth roughly $510K. But on this first page, it shows 414. So there's a difference.
Yeah, the golf merchandise is included in with the golf operations, 100,000 or so. I forget the exact number. Ray's number or Dan's number of 500,000 is the concessions of 414 plus the merchandise that they sell in the golf shop.
Not the rounds.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So with the rounds, that it's rounds.
Yeah, the golf operations includes the golf rounds, it includes the carts, it includes the merchandise, it includes the golf range, includes all those things, whereas the concessions is just the food and beverage only. Did that answer your question?
It did. Maybe if the bottom, you know, just like a ledger or something, explain it again. Get back to the chairman's point that if you have other people looking at it, it can be confusing in some. It's just under, you know, revenue. I'm good with what you're saying too. The range, the merchandise, operations, concessions, food and beverage. Good.
All those things can be done.
Yeah. Thank you.
Supervisor Noble.
I don't have a calculator here, but what I'm listening to and I'm thinking now is the concessions have been up significantly more. Well, when you take out your food and beverage and your merch and you put your merchandise with it, you get 510,000 up 93,000, but the concessions itself is up 90 some thousand, so it looks like the merchandise hasn't really increased too much. Is that really what you found?
It could be, yes.
That's pretty accurate. That's one of the reasons Dan's at a merchandising seminar today.
No. That's a good
seriously, segue. That's where he is. He's at a merchandising seminar.
Yeah, so what I'm seeing here is your merchandise hasn't increased hardly at all, but your concessions was most of your 93,000 was in concession.
That's way up.
Yeah.
Anything else on page 2? So we can move on.
Page 3, I believe Supervisor Noble asked last month for some historical information of how profitable the golf courses have been going back. We went back to 2003 and showing revenues and expenses and the debt service since that time. Revenues in 2000, and I highlighted a couple numbers just for a quick check. 2003, total revenues were $2,763,000. This year, they'll be at about 2.8 or a 1.2% increase. Again, all these numbers are at thousands of dollars, so that's 2.7 million, 2.7 million. I can put in the zeros, I can do whatever you want to do. The total expenses back in 2005 were $2,545,000. This year they're budgeted to be $2,444,000. And we're going to be really close to these budgeted numbers too. You'll kind of see that on the next page, for a decrease of 4%. So profit from operations before the debt service has actually gone up since 2003. And part of it's due to the active golf system. We think the more accurate numbers help them run their business better. And they've just been managing in a really, really tough economy, especially for the last 4 or 5 years. With revenues flat, they've been managing to keep their expenses in line, and there's even a decrease going down. Then the bottom section, there's debt service showing the interest and principal. Then the bottom line is profit on what we call the cash basis, which is what the golf division is asked by administration to hit as their target, basically break even every year.
Any questions on page 3? Move on to 4.
Page 4 is an interesting graph of net income by month. Put a little table at the bottom. Again, those are all thousands of dollars. If there's a negative in front of it, that means they lost money. And these are all year to date. It's not just by month. So for 2012, we started out in the first 3 months of the year with a loss of $216,000. In the month of April, that loss increased from $216,000 to $268,000. And ever since then, it's been going, the loss has been decreasing. And it's a markedly similar pattern every year, where you start out the beginning of the year losing money. There's really no revenue. You got to get people in. First of all, you have some fixed costs that you incur, whether there's golf or not. And then this year, we had more rounds, better food and beverage sales with flat revenues or even a decrease. And so you see this pattern, the same hook, fish hook, or whatever you call it, going up, but at a higher level. So the gap between the red and blue lines and the green line is the increased profit from 2010, 2011, 2012. 2012 is that top green line. And the last 4 months of 2010, we lost $188,000 in golf. Again, October will be a fairly, or September will be a fairly decent month. October, and maybe November and December, we don't really do too much. 2011, we lost $238,000 in the last 4 months. So the average is maybe a $200,000, $220,000 loss. So I'm not really predicting, but it looks like we should be breaking even if our performance the last 4 months of this year looks anything like the performance the last 4 months of the last 2 years. September's been pretty good.
So far.
Is that a 20? Yeah, so far.
Is our accounting process wanting it to be zero, even if we're showing a profit?
We would want it to be making as much money as we could.
So we will show a profit if we do show a profit?
Oh, absolutely, okay. Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Any questions on this? Supervisor Noble.
I'm going to go back to page 3.
I went to page 3.
What's that?
We already did page 3.
I know, I got a question. But it's not, I can call it any page I want. My question works.
Well, but as long as we're not here until 10:30.
Okay.
All right.
For the budget projection, would it be possible to project out the next 5 years based on the fact that we won't have this debt service in the next third, fourth, and fifth year? I guess what I'm trying to do is get a comfort level for myself and for other supervisors that, you know, when we're looking at this next budget, if you look at it, you know, with some vision towards the future, with some numbers that we could look on a piece of paper, that, you know, life looks pretty good once we get this debt service paid off. And in actuality, I don't believe, and I was here when we borrowed that money, I don't believe much, if any of that 20-year debt service went towards renewing the red course, the The Red Course has been pretty much sitting there waiting for its turn. And so all I'm saying is if we could maybe a five-year projection when we come around to the budget time, that we, so when we're looking at that, we can kind of see what the future holds for us.
Yeah, if we break even on the, well, the answer to your question is yes.
Thank you.
Yes, sir. I'm also back on page 3.
All right, I'm going to tell everybody here, when I say page 3, when we're done with page 3, we're done with page 3. But I'll allow it.
If I have some questions that come up, then I can take it offline. We can do it later, or we can just let everybody hear the questions.
We can do it now, but I mean, we're all adults here. When I say any more questions on page 3, that should be, we should all know that we're moving to page 4.
Right, but sometimes questions stimulate other thoughts, so that's why it came to me. On the expense line, Jim, does that account for any of the capital expenditures, such as an example, the irrigation investment?
It's operating expenses.
So that is?
Labor, utilities.
Okay. Because, you know, for many years there was very little capital investment, reinvestment, and that can be attested to by both Dan and Dave out there. Is it worthwhile to see us where the years maybe we made some reinvestments in there? Because after going out there visiting, and I've been out there for a few years, they've made dramatic improvements in the conditions out there. There was some years where we really weren't taking care of the course that it needed to be. I don't know if that's maybe a separate line item. Expenditure or something like that, you know, for instance, irrigation, carpets, but facilities, just from the point of interest, because I think that's where somebody, you'll put it off, eventually, the chickens come home to roost, and then it's a big expenditure, so I was just wondering if there's a way to capture that in a line item. Just think about it. I don't really know how to do it, it's just I have a level of interest in just making sure we're a little more even on how we take care of.
That would be under the yearly budget for golf operations, and it would be in many line items. One would be just equipment. One would be maintenance. There's a slew of them that it would be under, and equipment has been a big thing. And then we've done major renovations the last 4 years, and so it would be in the budget in all those locations also.
I see you got on page 5. I didn't jump ahead yet, so sorry. That's okay. We're good. Thank you.
I was going to do a Karnak there for a minute. But
yes, I'm saying.
Let's look at page 5. Look at capital expenditures for the last.
Anything else on page 4? We're going to go to page 5.
Okay, page 5 is capital expenditures for 2009, 10, 11. The column, I'm sorry, this is a little bit small. I don't know how to jam it onto another page or a bigger page. But on the left-hand side, the 2009, 10, 11, 12, and the total is what we've actually spent for those years. And for 2012, I put in the budget. We'll spend that budget or be darn close to spending it. And then in the middle columns, I put the budgets for those years, 9, 10, 11, 12, and a total, and really, they're about the same, because if you don't spend your budget in 1 year, you're going to most likely carry it over and spend it in the next year. Or in the case of 2009, we overspent the budget because there was some carryover money that came into that year. But this shows for a four-year period, including this year, where we're going to be spending our money. Golf courts, golf carts, we bought them in 2010. Other equipment, which is mostly mowers and things like that. The irrigation, there's a big chunk of money spent in 2010 for irrigation. Cart pass, we spent some money last year in 2011 on the red. This year was the white. Other is miscellaneous projects that they did. And you can kind of go down. There's one big number there underneath 2011 actual for building improvements last year. Most of that was spent on some clubhouse renovations for Brightdale. So this may be, I think, Supervisor Skolitsky, what you were looking for. Do give you some kind of an idea of where the money's been spent recently.
Any questions on page 5?
You know, and I'm not sure, Jimmy, you even know this, on the golf carts, they have projected life before we got a, is it?
3 to 4 years. We'll probably have to buy some either next year or the year after, but the way it was designed, and you'll see this in the budget process, is one-third every year starting, I can't remember if it's next year or the year after that.
I think it is next year. Any other questions for Jim?
Great job, Jim. Thank you for pulling that together.
On the business update? If not, thank you, Jim. And, you know, this is something that I think people should absorb. I know some didn't even notice what was on here this evening. So, you know, take it home, look at it. If you have any other questions, we can take it up next month also. So, we'll move on to highways.
Just a quick update on the projects. As we talked about earlier, the Highway CNMB project is under construction. We did something a little bit different on that project, where typically the utility companies relocate all their utilities prior to us beginning a project and closing the road. Because of time constraints this time of year, we asked the utilities if we would close the road, would they all come in at once, get all the work done, and they all agreed that is happening, and I think it's cutting the time by about a third, or down to one-third of what normally would be spent. They have just about everything relocated, and they're displacing all the new facilities into the old. Took a little bit of heat from some of the public wondering why it was closed just for utility work, but in hindsight, I think it was a good decision still. But the actual road construction is starting this week with storm sewer work and stripping topsoil and beginning grading. We are going to do something a little bit different. That is a fill job where we have to haul fill in to raise the road a little bit out of the flood area. And we're going to be using bottom ash from the Pleasant Prairie Power Plant for that fill. It's a very stable and a material that gets really firm, almost like concrete. So and plus it's recycling what normally would go to a landfill. So looking forward to the results of that. On Highway K, west of Highway 31, we were able to get the section of that road from Highway 31 to the school completed and open prior to the school opening. Took a few days for the public to get used to that fact that was actually open. It had the appearance of being closed, but it is in fact open and can be used for whatever purposes the school feels is appropriate. And I think everybody's catching on now. The rest of that project is moving along real well, and it's still on schedule to be completed at the end of October. Highway G, 30th Avenue, between 18th Street and 15th Street, we got half of the pavement in, the west half of all the concrete is in. They're working on sidewalk now, and the rest of that road will be completed in the next few weeks, but I think we're still probably looking at mid-October to get it open to traffic. Had a little bit of a lost about 10 days. We ran into some contaminated soil underneath the old pavement when we stripped off the old asphalt, and we ran into it looked like the best we could determine was some sort of diesel fuel that probably was put there back in the 1950s before that pavement was put there. And, you know, someone, I'm sure, had some dirty soil and decided, you know, that was a good place to put it. And so we live with that. Unfortunately, it takes a lot of time and funds to remove that and properly dispose of it, but that has been done. Otherwise, that project's been going along well. That's basically the only issue there. Something that came up just, I think it was like last Wednesday or Thursday, we currently have a project out on Highway W. We have federal funds in place to reconstruct a curb. This is on Highway W in the town of Salem, between Highway 50 and Highway F. There's not quite a 90-degree curve in Highway W, but close to it. Regularly have accidents there. In fact, probably, I would say average maybe twice a month, we're out there repairing damage that's done by vehicles on that curve. So we do have a project funding in place to reconstruct that curve. That project is not scheduled for a few years yet. What we don't have federal funds in for is the right-of-way acquisition. And this project, what I handed out, you can see the existing highway, and the red line would be the new center line, taking the sharpness out of that curb. By realigning Highway W, we need to purchase that property that's outlined in black, and there's a house and a pole barn that would have to be purchased as part of that, and anybody that lived in the house would have to be relocated. The current cost estimate to purchase that property, the house, the pole barn, and relocation cost is about $365,000. What happened last week is we found out that property is now in foreclosure. The house is abandoned, and that whole property is in foreclosure, which we're thinking we have to better define it, but we think we could get that property from between $150,000 and $175,000 instead of the $365,000 that it would cost if somebody was living there. So I did just briefly touch base with Corporation Counsel. They said we have every right to purchase that property just as anybody else would at a sheriff's sale. So there's no action that we need to take right now. If in fact we can move forward with this, it would require obviously approval of the committee and the county board. I get the biggest issue right now is we don't have any of the right-of-way acquisition money budgeted for, so in this year's budget, and it's likely that the sheriff's sale would take place around November of this year. So it's an opportunity to, you know, save the county a considerable amount of money. The problem is, like I said, first of all, we don't have the money budgeted, and second of all, things would have to move really, really quickly on our part to get the thing approved. But I just wanted to let you know, maybe think about it, and I may be coming back to you in October, November for approval if we can somehow find some funding to get this accomplished, and maybe maneuvering some of the funds between projects we'll be able to do it. But it's something that I just wanted to give you a heads up on. It may be coming up in the future. I just think it's an opportunity that is just too good to pass up, from a study standpoint. You know, if we can accomplish it, so much the better.
Gary, what would we do? I'm very familiar with this. I went down there twice today, and I'm familiar with all the dents in the houses and the guardrails down there, but there's a lot of land then once we would acquire what we would need for the road right of way. Between the old Highway W to the east there, south, northeast, would there be saleable land? There should be.
There could be. Some of it, like the existing right of way, it actually reverts back to the adjoining property owner, so we would lose a little bit of it, but there might be, you know, I'd have to check the zoning rules, but there could be one or two saleable.
There's only one house there?
There would only be one house that would be affected by the realignment.
One house. And I'm sure you talked to the Corporation Council, what's the bank involved? Which bank?
There is a bank, out-of-state bank, which complicates things mightily.
Yes.
That would be our first move, would be to try to work with the bank and purchase it directly, but...
And they work well. They work well right now.
Yeah, they didn't think... They thought that the process was the foreclosure process was too far along, but we'd be looking into that, whatever right. way possible.
Supervisor Noble?
Yeah, I think we should try to move on that, because if we don't, you know, somebody's going to read the minutes and decide, well, if they don't buy it, I will, and I'll sell it in 2 years to the county for $100,000 profit, so... should be involved, otherwise we're just going to spend somebody's going to make $100,000 off of us.
Yeah, and
unfortunately, it won't be the poor guy who went into foreclosure for this.
Correct. Yeah, it's unfortunate, you know, but on the other hand, it's so far along now that property's lost from that, you know, for that person. But I actually did talk to Corp Counsel about, you know, talking about this and dealing with, you know, the sheriff's sale and the bank, and they said just everything in the open, is because there's not, everybody's going to, on these type of foreclosure and sheriff sales, everybody knows everything. There's no hidden agendas or anything in these type of sales, so, you know, feel free to speak, you know, however we need to make sure that everybody is... knows exactly what we're doing.
If you look at that black line, for people that don't know the road, that is the road. And it actually takes a direct left-hand turn almost at the bottom of a hill. Doesn't show the hill here, but you're talking, you're going 25 miles an hour in a truck or a car. You almost have to stop to make that left-hand turn. And the house directly towards the river there has been hit so many times that it's amazing.
Anyway, is there any possibility, because we talked about really there's nothing budgeted, to act quickly? It's counter to anything we're able to do. Is it feasible that you have any funds that have been already approved and budgeted for maybe another acquisition or some other project that maybe is out 6 months, 12 months, that perhaps you may be able to, can reappropriate to take advantage of? Because to supervise another point, you know, somebody else can make $200,000 off of our backs otherwise. And understand if this is kind of a long term, we need to make this change. There's public safety issues here. It sounds like there are. Traffic is heavy enough on that road to justify. Is that something that can ever be done? Or, you know, we're living in different times. We got to kind of think sometimes differently on how we've done things in the past.
We absolutely, that's what we would be looking for. That exact type of thing. A project that, might have funding in the construction area that gets delayed and we borrow from that fund and then budget for those funds in the year that the actual construction on the other project would take place. So yeah, we'll
kind of look
exactly.
Okay, thank you.
And, but we'll just make sure everybody, as always, is aware of what we're doing when we maneuver funds around. And then just the last thing, at the last meeting that came up about the 10-hour work days and, you know, if in fact we're becoming more efficient by working the four 10-hour days, and we just took a very brief look at one area. We'll have a lot more detailed reports when we do our budget presentation, but we did look at the asphalt paving operation, and so that we were kind of comparing apples with apples. We looked at the amount of labor hours it takes to pave 1 mile of county road. And this year, working the 410s versus prior years, we're about 10 to 15% less hours to pave 1 mile of county trunk highway. So, you know, that was a very brief look at, you know, the efficiencies that we might have gained. But, you know, I was pretty happy that, in fact, we are becoming considerably more efficient, having to spend less hours doing, getting the same amount of work done. So, again, we'll have a little bit more detailed reports during the budget process, but just want to let you know that it is, in fact, working.
And that's great. Glad to hear that. But as equally important, I think, is what's the general consensus of the crews?
They generally love it.
Okay. And they're willing to be open.
Yeah.
You guys, you know?
Yeah, I think they
would. There's some real sites.
Yeah, no complaints, nothing but, good work about that.
Great.
So, it all's well on that.
You know, because you get more efficient, but morale's in the toilet, and the quality of your work goes down. So, I mean, right. It needs to be that hand in glove fit for it to really benefit everybody. Thank you.
I think I'm going to have to one more time remind supervisors that questions and comments, this isn't a conversation. You address the chair and ask, if you can ask a question, or it goes through the chair. I guess some people don't get it, but that's the way it's going to be on this committee. That's the way it is on most committees. And hopefully we can do better next time. What Gary's talking about there is very simply explained through what private contractors and public have known for years, is that a mobilization costs you money. Today, I had a 1.5 day project in Lake Geneva that we completed in 1 day. Now, you figure 2 mobilizations, and what a mobilization is all your equipment going to Lake Geneva and some of your stuff coming back. And what Gary's saving money on is his guys out there for 10 hours instead of 7.5. And it just makes sense. So if the employees are pleased, I guess we should be very pleased. Anything else, Gary?
Nothing else.
We already did the, talked about the Katy Park Master Plan. New business parks.
Well, the good news is the dam contractor did show up last Thursday at Pets and started removing the dam. He worked about it.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I don't know if there is actually one thing left for Gary.
Yeah. There was 2 on the... Repurpose highway funds. We didn't do that.
Sorry. This wasn't part of my reports, but in this year's budget, we had, and there should be an attachment. Did you have the attachment?
I remember reading it, yeah.
Okay, sorry. We had budgeted $48,000 to refurbish 2 graders that we use. Refurbishing is basically replacing the cabs of the graders. The graders, pretty heavy duty iron components until you get to the actual cab of them. Where the operator sits and where it tends to not quite be built as heavy duty. But anyways, that refurbishing was replacing those cabs in an attempt to extend the life of the grader. So when we bid the project, they came in incredibly low at $8,000 a piece to refurbish the graders, and for the two graders, it was $16,000 and left about $32,000 remaining. What we're asking tonight for approval is to refurbish one additional grader at that same cost. The contractor will honor that $8,000. So do one more grader, and then for $8,000, and then something that came up during winter of this year, earlier this year during the winter, OSHA began visiting the highway departments, and because they're at one of the other counties in the state, there was actually a fatality caused by a person that got caught in the augers on the back of the truck. There's an auger mechanism, hydraulic auger, disperses the salt out of the truck. A person actually, I don't know if it was their clothes or their, I think it was a sleeve on their arm, got caught in that auger and unfortunately did enough damage to the person that it was a fatality. So OSHA started coming in and visiting the highway departments. They didn't visit Kenosha County, but they issued a general guidance that some additional guards need to be put along the perimeter of these augers so that, you know, to prevent these type of incidents from ever occurring again. We did go ahead and we've already done the work at a cost of about $9,000, and we, if we fund that work, we would also like to do some of the remaining funds from that original $48,000 that was designated to do the greater provision. So it would still leave a balance of $15,000 in that budget, and you know, we're not, that would just remain, and we wouldn't be spending that.
So we don't have a budget modification for this?
I think this one, if Jimmy can speak better, yeah. I'll
budget modification.
I checked to see if we needed a resolution or a budget mod, and Al Schwartz said no, it just needs a letter to the Finance Committee, but it has to be run through Mr. Cruiser, whose signature we just got on top of it.
Because we've got
you
it.
You guys have to know about it.
We've got it in the yeah. And this is the allocation of it. I like that they say all you need then is thank you for your attention to these matters. That's to a no.
I just, I'm assuming that the contractor is willing to do another refurbish for the same price he quoted for two?
Correct. Yeah, $30,000.
And we obviously need to refurbish a third?
Correct. Yes. Yeah, if you buy a new grader right now, you're looking at $175,000-$180,000 for a new grader. If we, if the only issues we're having is with the cabs, you know, I think, you know, we could extend the lives of these indefinitely. And they're very important to us because they, we primarily grade gravel shoulders, but in the winter they both plow snow and they scrape hard packed snow off of the roads. It's the only equipment we have that's capable of scraping hard packed snow off of roads. So they're very important pieces of equipment for us.
Any questions for Gary on this transfer? If not, now we'll go down to parks.
So anyways, the dam contractor is there. He's got the old deck out. Today he was actually pounding out the dam itself. Everything's going good. The little walk bridge is removed. The abutments are still there. If you get a chance to take a ride out there, please do so. The park is now open from County Highway JR all the way down to Area 4 by the dam. The curbing, the storm sewer, the paving, the striping, that's all done. There is a little bit of landscaping behind the curbs yet, and they are working on as well putting the signs back in. On the north side of the park, from parking areas 5 and 6, the storm sewer work is going on at this point, and I believe Heavy Highway was in there starting to pull the curbs as well. The old curbings, pull those out and get that ready. Other than that, everything there is going pretty smoothly. We're thinking that by the end of the week, they'll have the river open, have the dam completely out, and work in on stream banks and probably be ready for bridge construction. Silver Lake Trail, the bridges are ordered. We have a signed agreement with the DNR, and everything is going good. I don't know the exact start date for the clearing and grubbing.
Yeah, there's not.
I haven't heard that yet. The KD Park expansion, I got a tentative notice that we were going to be awarded $300,000, but that is based on, that number could change. I think that's the high. It could go down a little bit based on the DNR's certified appraisal that we're waiting for them to get right now. So that's just sitting there waiting. Like I said, I'm waiting for their appraisers to get back to them. I got a discussion here on the new permit for special purpose mobility devices on the bike trail, if everyone had a chance to look at it. It's just a simple little permit that we can do here in our office and laminate. There won't be any charge for it. There is just a few guidelines here for us to use to issue it, and I think it's pretty straightforward. Corp Counsel said that I have the authority to do it, so I guess we need their blessing.
I think when his discussion with Bernie was that administratively he can put this in place. We wanted to just bring it to the committee for any thoughts or comments on it.
Yeah.
But basically the thoughts were that we were very hesitant, but we recognize that there is a need, and we just wanted to make sure to protect everybody that's out there, the folks that are disabled as well as those folks that aren't, so that we don't create any safety things. And this seemed like a reasonable approach.
To run
Noble. You know, I just was wondering, what is the problem with having electric bikes and you don't have to be handicapped? I know when we had preliminary talk about the KD, there were some supervisors that were okay with electric motors, and you know, and to me it's just the same thing. If you're okay with an electric motor in a lake, why not have not being okay with an electric assist motor on a bicycle? Just curious what's the reason for not allowing it?
The speed of the electric bicycles still go 25 miles an hour.
Yeah, but you can go 25 miles an hour with a bike, too.
You can if you're pedaling hard.
Yeah.
It's just, it's the old slippery slope scenario, in my mind, that once you start to open that up, there's going to be the guy that buys the $29.95 kit, puts it on his bike, doesn't check out his brakes because doesn't think that far ahead, and now we've got a situation where, but he's got it and I want that. And so motorized bikes in general, it's still, I think, the hard and fast rule not to allow anything motorized on those is the cleanest way to maintain the best possible conditions for all the folks that use those trails.
I'm okay with that as long as we remain consistent then.
And that
we
is
shouldn't have electric motors in the lake either.
Well,
in my opinion, I'm just saying I'm going to be consistent. If I don't see a federal rule or anything here telling us we can't do it,
it's a totally safety thing, basically.
Yeah.
And an electric motor in a lake is just because it doesn't make any noise and it doesn't.
No noise, no speed, no pollution.
Well, there's the environment of churning up the water. I mean, churning up the weeds and stuff like that. I mean, in our lake, we don't allow any lakes, any motorized, electric or other, because, you know, the ecology of the lake.
That'll be another discussion.
Okay, I'm just saying, I'm going to be consistent with this, just so you know.
It's a safety thing, and there's no municipalities that allow that on a bicycle trail. What we do offer, and what other municipalities offer, is a solution. If you have a motorized vehicle, you can go like the Bong and ride on the trails, and, you know, so, I mean, people aren't being shut out. It's just that once you start, you get a guy with a kid on his bicycle, and then you get him in all kind of.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, sir.
Quick one. Do we have to add any additional signage or any costs like that? No. I mean, how would, you know, I'm okay with you handling all that. How would somebody know, wait a minute, you know, it says no motorized vehicles. In general, I don't know if that's an issue. I'm not saying it will. I just asked a question.
John, on his certificate, if someone were to get, if there were someone to question that, and they had the intestinal fortitude to go up to the person on the hover round and ask them, they're going to have their permit, and it'll stand there. So beyond that situation, if there were somebody that didn't go and confront somebody, if they were to ask or do a contact a supervisor or some other elected official, say, or us directly, we'd be able to explain it. I just don't think it's going to be such a limited population doing it, but for those folks that do want to do it, it's going to be very meaningful. So this appears to be a reasonable way to go about it.
Thank you.
Down at Kemper Center, south of the Anderson Arts Center, there's a driveway that used to go back to the old carriage house that sat on the property years ago. That's been gone for about 10 years now. Anyways, that the only ones really using that driveway was the city water utility to get back to their storm sewer outfall that's kind of in the southeast corner of the property, and they have an easement to that. So they're given an easement for the driveway as well, and the agreement was that they would rebuild that driveway and the apron and the sidewalk to get access to their outfall. So they've done that. They've replaced the roadway and widened it and installed a new sidewalk and apron. And the last week when I was down there late, they still had some landscaping to go, and I know they still have fencing and gates to install. Otherwise, that was coming right along. They'll probably be finished, I would suspect, this week. I just want to remind everybody that September 22nd is Oktoberfest again out at Old Settlers Park. You can come there with no money and still have fun. We still have the wiener dog races, the music, the dancing, the car show, and the fireworks is all free. There's no charge. But there will be plenty of food and beverages available. And like I said, last year they spent $5,000 on the fireworks. They had a terrific fireworks display at the end of the event in the evening. So if you can get out there, come on out, especially the wiener dog races. They were pretty funny. So and moving on, Pringle Nature Center, I found out why we weren't getting minutes regularly. It's because they had switched to bi-monthly meetings. So I'll give you a notice on that. And then I did include just kind of a picture. I wanted to show you kind of what the park was looking at. These are the stamped concrete crosswalks now in the park where they cross the intersection. And this was before the roadway was open. I just wanted to show you a section of the curbing and the asphalt and the landscaping. So, but everything there is looking good. If you haven't been out to Pets, I'd say go look, because what an improvement. I mean, it looks like a brand new park. It's really nice.
Well, now we've got a resolution for the
dam removal.
Yeah, that's a resolution to accept those $42,000 and some change from the Wisconsin DNR dam abandonment program. It could go to $50,000 if they deem some other things that went on with that project. If they're eligible, we could get the full 50, but right now we're told we're eligible for the $42,000 and change.
And that's on top of all the other grants we've got.
Right.
Holding, what, 300 something?
380.
We have 234, 150, that's 384 plus this.
Right.
And the cost of the project is 627. $627,000. By the time, and we had a budget for $500,000. So by the time we're all done with this, there's going to be over $300,000 left over. And by resolution, that $300,000 has to be put towards Highway K project.
Right. So we've been awarded this. So all we need tonight by the committee is a
move to approve.
Move to approve. Moved by Supervisor Dodge. Any discussion?
Second.
Second by Gabe Noodle. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
You with the governance?
Aye.
So we're approved.
Mr. Vigil?
Yes, sir.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, sir.
Jim, is there, you mentioned the Highway K, but we talked about the Highway W. You know, I was just bringing up, is there any way that some of that can be earmarked for an opportunity? Or, I don't know, I don't.
Depending on the cost of Highway K, yeah. I mean, Highway, you know,
not to say that isn't correct.
Yeah, depending on how, you know, when the final cost involved in that.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Thank you.
Any other matters that may be brought before the committee? Right.
Just a couple quick things to make the committee aware of. This week, the RFP for the Gulf, potential contracting out of food and beverage operations is going out. We thought we were going to launch it last week, but we're good. We think we've got all the administrative loose ends tied up. That's going out this week. Also, just a bit of information on the balloon thing. I did talk with John Tryon, the owner of Lake Geneva Balloon Company, and he actually recommended talking to the, he knows the Waterford folks too, because he was involved in that. Bottom line, there are some things involved in terms of typically, well, he said looking at Katy Park, we could probably actually have an event that would attract, could safely accommodate north of 50 guys, balloons, 50 balloons. But more realistically, if you could get an event that was in the 10 to 15 balloon range, would be still a fun thing. The key is, as they did in Waterford, you have to piggyback some other activities with it because the weather has to be so perfect in order for them to do a launch. A lot of times people get disappointed because you aren't able to do it because the wind doesn't cooperate. It's the big factor. And so they piggybacked it with a car show and some other things. So point is, to be successful, there's a few different pieces you need to work into the puzzle. There are some other things you talk about in terms of sponsorships, how important it was, because most of these folks, when they come, they actually, for most of these events, like the one you were talking about in Arizona, typically the sponsoring agency provides lodging, covers lodging costs and travel costs for those guys to get there. And then, yeah, so there's some other things to it, but bottom line, it's all very worthwhile looking into, and we'll continue to dig into that to put some type of a proposal together for an event next year. So that was one thing. And then the last thing was for October, we probably are going to need to have two meetings. One, our regular meeting, which the, I didn't bring my calendar, but I know that first. October 2nd is the first Monday.
October,
and that's
first,
only,
I believe.
Or the first, you're right. Yeah, the first. Yeah, the first is the Monday. And that's only, well, it's technically, I guess, 3 weeks from tonight. But if that's okay, that would be fine. Otherwise, we can bump that back 1 week if it makes sense to have just a little bit more time in between meetings. And then I'd recommend probably that following week that we have our budget meeting. That Monday, the say if we move it to the 8th and then have the next one on the 15th, that would probably be the best schedule because it would still give time to get it through our committee. And I know the Finance Committee takes things up then that following week, the 23rd, I think, is when they start their review. And I think that the executive presents the budget the second. Yeah, he presents it on the second. That's right. So the first time we could get a kick at it would be the 8th. So maybe we do have to have our meeting on the 1st then. kind of talk myself. Unless we try to do the budget in a regular meeting at one, no, that's not usually good.
That's not good. I mean, we spent a couple, 2.5 hours on this meeting, and on the budget, we'll spend that.
So then we really probably should have the October 1st, have a regular meeting. It'll probably be a light meeting because it's only a few weeks from now.
Right.
And have the budget meeting the next week on the 8th.
On the 8th. Mr. Sisla.
One thing I forgot to mention on the CNMV project, and I remember because of the next meeting, we do need to, or I'm going to recommend that the speed limit on Highway CNMV be reduced to 45 miles per hour as they approach this new intersection. So that would be, I would bring a resolution or an ordinance to them for your consideration at that October meeting.
Okay. Then the only other thing is that's the request for proposal. There's, what are these?
Copies of the RFP.
Yeah.
Anyone who might like one.
Right. The committee to look at. You know, after I did read that, Ray asked me, you know, who do you think would be interested, you know, and I said, well, definitely we want people in the locale, you know, so I mentioned Jetties. I said, they're the only ones with liquor license and right. Once I read this thing, they're not going to be interested. It's almost like that page that you mentioned about the parking structure. It's going to intimidate any local little guy.
It was, and again, that's working with, because we don't get to put these things together in a vacuum.
Yeah.
We have to work with purchasing, and so there's a lot of stuff in there that, yeah, is.
I mean, there's stuff a lot of them won't even have. I can't even, it doesn't come into my mind right now what they won't have, but I know they won't. I have it because I'm a corporation. But I mean, a lot of them won't even be able to comply. If it's somebody, so the only reason I mention that is I think we actually have to advertise much bigger than what is this silly paper we're in?
The labor paper. Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, and this one, I don't think this would be an appropriate one to do in the labor paper.
But no one reads a labor paper.
Yeah.
And this is, we're looking for serious business people. So I think we have to advertise in Milwaukee and Chicago and
open it up.
Yeah. I mean, I think everybody, when are we talking about doing this RFP? This week?
We're going to ship it out this week. We want to launch it this week.
So, committee members want a chance to read that? Have they gotten it?
They haven't. Jim's got it tonight. They literally got the clearing from purchasing this morning on it.
Yeah. So I've read it. But I think you should all read it. And it's very complex. You know, so when I mentioned Jetty's Bar, they wouldn't even, they'd look at that. No.
I think there still will be some local restaurateurs and other businesses that would be interested. Jetties, yeah, I can't.
But there,
I
don't, whoever is involved is going to have a good attorney to go through all this. And I mean, they're not going to jump on this quick. It's going to have to be, I think, some caterer that's done this type of thing before. I didn't expect it at all to be this much.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm not saying it shouldn't be, but I did not expect. I mean, it took me a while to read that thing.
That's what took so long to put together.
It's intimidating.
It's
very intimidating. So that's why I related it to the parking structure.
And some levels it is. Yeah, I agree.
So anything else then?
I think that was it.
We have a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Supervisor Dodd. Second by Supervisor Noble. All those favor?
Aye.
Do the governor.
Now that the meeting's over with one night.